response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
From football, from baseball to some football here as we kick off hour number three of After Hours right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. Thank you all for joining us here. If you missed any part of the show, you'd like to take a look back and listen. We talked a lot about Jack Caglione in the first hour plus of the show here, which is to be expected. You can listen to us via our podcast. You can download the Odyssey app, and you can catch any of our shows live anywhere in the world. You can also go back and listen to our programs. We also have our chapters page if you want to hear talk specifically catered to the Royals or Major League Baseball or the Chiefs or the NFL or college football, what have you. You can go to the chapters page and get specifically curated information right there for you in the Odyssey app. I want to kick off our final hour of the program here before we get Jalen Thompson on with us at 8:30 to discuss the College Football Hall of Fame nominees for this upcoming year. The 2025 nominees were announced, 79 of them to be exact, and there are some big heavy hitters on this list. So collegefootballnews.com has them ranked, at least according to their opinion, from 79 down to 1. I kind of want to look at some of these names and see if they are, in my view, no doubt College Football Hall of Fame selections or not. Number one on this list, Cam Newton. Duh. I mean, that's a shoe-in. 2010 Heisman Trophy winner. He won a national title at Auburn, obviously. He won every award known to man in that 2010 season. SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Davey O'Brien. He won the Maxwell and the Walter Camp Awards. He's absolutely going to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. Mark Ingram. He's another no-doubter. He won a national title with Alabama. He was, in fact, the MVP of the BCS National Championship game in 2009, the same year he won the Heisman Trophy and took home SEC Offensive Player of the Year honors. Third on the list, Robert Griffin III. He was a two-time All-Big 12 selection, Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year in 2011, the same year he won the AP Player of the Year, the Davey O'Brien Award, and ultimately the Heisman Memorial Trophy. I think Robert Griffin III is also going to be inducted into this class. James Laurinaitis. The first non-quarterback or non-Heisman Trophy winner on this list. Laurinaitis was a three-time first-team All-American at Ohio State. Twice won Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. He won the Butkus Award in 2007. He won the Nagurski in 2006. James Laurinaitis is a Hall of Famer, no doubt in my mind. Then you got Manti Te'o. Should be inducted into this class as well. He was second in 2012 for the Heisman Trophy Award. He became the first player in college football history to win the Maxwell Award for the best player in college football, not the Heisman, Walter Camp Award, the Bednarik, the Butkus, the Lombardi, and Nagurski Awards. He won all of them in the 2012 season. First and only player ever to do that. He should be inducted. Ndamukong Suh. He was a Heisman Trophy finalist out of Nebraska in 2009, All-American. He won the Bednarik, the Lombardi, the Nagurski, and the Outland Award. He was the AP College Player of the Year in 2009. Not the nicest football player on planet Earth, but a hell of a football player at that. A couple of other big-time names. Eric Bieniemy is on this list. Of course, everybody knows him in this area as the Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator for all those years. But he was also a pretty phenomenal football player at the University of Colorado. He was a first-team All-American in 1990. He was third in the Heisman voting that year. He was a two-time All-Big Eight selection. He set and still holds 8 separate rushing records at the University of Colorado, and he played in 2 national championship games. Ken Dorsey, quarterback for Miami all those years ago, helped them win back-to-back national championships. Antoine Randall L. from Indiana, who was a phenomenal quarterback before he made his way to the NFL and became a wide receiver. As I go up this list, Jordan Lynch. Shout out to anybody who remembers Northern Illinois quarterback Jordan Lynch. He was a dog, Heisman Trophy finalist for the Huskies. He was the first player in FBS history to have over 3,000 yards passing and over 1,500 yards rushing in the same season. He did it twice. That could be a dark horse pick for a College Football Hall of Fame selection. Kellen Moore, he is still the winningest starting quarterback in the history of college football. He won 94.3% of games he started in with the Boise State Broncos. He had the lowest career interception percentage of anybody and tied the NCAA record with four seasons of 3,000 or more yards passing. Percy Harvin, or as I say, Tavon Austin before Tavon Austin, phenomenal wide receiver, played some running back, outstanding return man. He was an all-purpose guy. He was astonishing to watch. Kiana Carter was a Heisman Trophy runner-up in 1994. I go down this list a little bit further. Josh Heupel from Oklahoma, he is on this list. Eric Weddle, Ryan Kerrigan, Aaron Donald is on this list as well. Ryan Leaf, DeBricka Shaw Ferguson, a little local regional feel to it. Nobody from Mizzou or KU was nominated this year, but Terrence Newman, DB at K-State, is among the nominees this year. First team All-American unanimously in 2002. He won the Thorpe Award that year. He was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year and was also first team All Big 12. So a big shout out there to Terrence Newman, K-State Wildcat. Casey Hampton is on this list. Dallas Clark, University of Iowa, first team All-American in 2002. He won the Mackey Award. He was a two-time All Big 10 selection. Sebastian Janikowski, he is the only two-time winner of the Lou Groza Award ever. He's nominated here. DeSean Jackson, during his time at Cal, where he was a two-time All-American. Alan Faneca, 1997 All-American for LSU. Jonathan Vilma, dog at Miami. Richard Seymour, who was a great player at Georgia, two-time All-SEC. He was an All-American in 2000. Jonathan Stewart. Alan Krutz, who was another great one, became a great offensive lineman in the National Football League. Randall Cobb is on this list. Ken Norton Jr., Brad Banks, another guy from Iowa. He was the Heisman runner-up in 2002 to Carson Palmer. He won the Davey O'Brien and the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year that year. Takeo Spikes, Elvis Dumervil is a really good name on there. Marvin Harrison, senior, obviously. Ron Rivera, more commonly known as a great coach in the National Football League, led the Panthers to a Super Bowl. But before that, he was an All-American linebacker at Cal. So that's an interesting name. DeMeco Ryans, current Houston Texans head coach, but was an All-American at Alabama. Dez Bryant is on this list. He was an All-American in 08, a finalist for the Biletnikoff. He was also a great return man for the Cowboys. Marshawn Lynch, Morton Anderson. He is currently, or still is, the all-time leader in field goals by any kicker in Big Ten history during his time at Michigan State. So those are just some of the names on there. Vernon Davis is another intriguing name. But yeah, 79 nominees for the College Football Hall of Fame list. Sticking around football, we have it finally announced. It is official. Who is going to be on the cover of Madden 26, for those who care? Admittedly, I haven't bought a Madden in a while. I think the last Madden that I was honestly like excited to purchase might have been, Madden 20, maybe? Was that the year that Mahomes was on the cover?
Pretty sure that was Lamar.
No, that was 21. Lamar was on Madden 20.
Lamar, I think, 21.
I think Madden 20. Madden 20. Yeah. Okay. So Madden 20 was Patrick Mahomes. That was, honest to God, the biggest reason I bought it was because Mahomes was on the cover. I just thought that was cool. And then he was on the cover again in 22 alongside Tom Brady, but I didn't buy that one.
I think I played 21 the most.
Mm. 20 is honestly the one that and I've played all of the Madden since, you know, I haven't bought them, but I've played all the Madden since. 20 is the best Madden that's come out in the last, from 20 to this past one in 25, it's been the best one. So that was the year that they introduced like superstars into the game, right? Like the X Factors and all those things. The game was different. Like they actually did something to make the game different and in a very good way. And since then, it's just been the same monotonous thing over and over and over and over and over again. So, hey, I don't know. I mean, Saquon's going to be on the cover, absolutely deserving of being on the cover of Madden 26. The cover is, of course, him doing the most iconic play of the previous season where he's backwards hurdling over somebody. The video is hilarious because he's obviously like he jumps and then he's sort of held up very briefly by some sort of string or something that's keeping him off the ground a little bit longer. So it appears that he's levitating. And there are people in the comments that are like, oh my God, did he just float in midair? No, man. Like, come on. You're smarter than that. Like, there's no way you believe Saquon Barkley just jumped up and then sat there in midair for a second and a half and then came back down to the ground. That's not humanly possible. Physics doesn't allow it. Anyway, good for Saquon Barkley. Will I buy the game? Absolutely not. I'm not going to. Sorry, I saw it last week. We posted a social media thing. It's like, are you more excited for Madden 26 or College Football 26? College football. I'd buy College Football 26 three times before I bought Madden once. I'm being honest. It's the second college football game that's come out in the last 10 years, so that obviously adds a part to it. But I played College Football 25 a lot. I played Madden 25 this year. College Football 25 was way better. It was just a better game. I hate to be that person, but Madden sucks. It has sucked for a while, and it's unfortunate. Just my opinion on the matter. And I'm sure there's people out there that really love Madden and really hate College Football 25, and that's fine. I'm just not one of those people. I thoroughly have unenjoyed playing Madden over the last few years. And I thought that it might get better whenever PS5 came out and they made the next-gen changes, and it wasn't. And, you know, I played College Football 25. I had heard that Madden 25 was very similar in its mechanics and what it did. It was still clunky. Madden 25 has problems, dude. It's so bad. So bad. Somebody says Tecmo Bowl is better than Madden. At this point, yeah. It used to be a great video game. It used to be so much fun to play.
But do you remember Retro Bowl?
Oh, I remember. I got Retro Bowl on my phone, man.
I still do, too. I was playing it a little earlier.
I have Retro Bowl Pro and Retro Bowl College that I play regularly on my phone. I just don't think it's a good game anymore, dude. Look around. Like, look at other sports games that are out there now. Like, College Football 25, College Football blew it out of the water. I'm a big NBA 2K guy, and as much as 2K frustrates me, it still blows Madden out of the water. I look at MLB The Show, blows Madden out of the water. Even like I'll play NHL or FIFA with buddies, and I'm not a huge hockey or a soccer fan, but those are more fun to play than Madden is. Somebody said people who don't like Madden are trash at Madden, and I might be, but I don't play online. I've never been like a play online for football games. Like college football, I'll play against my buddies or I'll play dynasty mode. I don't play online. I play online with 2K quite a bit. I just don't enjoy it as a video game. I don't, and I haven't for years.
I'll dispute that take. I consider myself a fairly good Madden player, and it gets boring after so long. I mean, I find myself doing more like the whole like Bengal YouTube videos where you're rebuilding teams more than actually going online and being competitive, because it's the same stuff over and over.
Yeah, you got play spammers and all those things. Guys find like the, what is it, the mid blitz or whatever, that guys just spam that over and over again. Yeah, it's just every year people find like 5 or 6 plays that work every single time in an online platform, and then they just spam it to the upteenth degree, and it's nauseating.
Have you seen Ben Kurt, the former Green Bay and a couple other teams quarterback? Exactly what you're saying. He just found a play where he only has to make like 4 adjustments, and then it gets open every time.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's bad. It's a bad game. Like, the show is straight up, right? 2K has its own problems, I'll say. My biggest problem with 2K this year, and I play 2K online regularly. It is the only game, really, that I play online almost exclusively. Like, you make your player, right? You have, like, my career or whatever. I'm in, like, my 4th NBA game with this dude still. And I've played, like, 900 rec games. Like, that's all I do is play online when I get on 2K. My problem with the game this year, ball screens, bro. Oh, my God. You'll play against a team that has a point guard with 99.3, and the center has no other stats besides, like, 99 defensive rebound, 95 offensive rebound, and 95 strength, where he has, like, Hall of Fame brick wall, or he sets a screen on you and basically commits homicide on the floor. And then he just stands there, right? Like, it's just ball screens over and over and over and over. And this guy's little 5'10 point guard is just dribble, 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 dribble until you hit a screen that you can't get through. And then it's a 30-footer green. And you're like, how is this fun for anybody? Guys are just standing in the corner while the point guard in the center play this little non-existent pick and roll game because the center is just setting picks so that the point guard can get open to shoot a three. How is that fun? How is that fun for anybody? And when I have those, I get very vocal when those games occur. 913-586-7965 is our number. I'll get off my Madden and 2K soapbox here for just a little bit. A couple more stories coming up before we get to Jalen Thompson. Don't forget, he's coming up at 8:30. He's the Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star. He'll be joining us to talk about Jack Caglione and where the Royals are going here in the month of June as they get underway tomorrow night in St. Louis. After Hours with Logan Weber and Jacob Mustard right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bit of a shocker coming out of the NFL world. The announcement that Frank Ragnow is retiring. Didn't see that one coming. The 29-year-old is a 7-year pro after being drafted in the first round out of the University of Arkansas back in 2018. He has been a second-team All-Pro 3 times, including last season. He is a 4-time Pro Bowler, including the past 3 years. 96 starts across 7 years. Calling it quits. I'm, you know, surprised by this move. We're seeing this happen, though, more and more often. It's surprising for somebody like Frank Ragnow, you know, playing for the Lions, because he's been with the Lions his entire career. He was a part of some really, really bad teams when he got to Detroit initially, and now as a part of a winning franchise, he's done. According to Pro Football Focus, he was the second best center in the NFL last year, behind only the Chiefs' Creed Humphrey. 29 years old, 4-time Pro Bowler, calling it quits. And doing so on June 2nd, which it has an interesting feel to it. You know, you're past free agency, you're past the NFL draft. It can be kind of difficult to find an heir apparent or replacement in any sort of, you know, in any of those respects. As the Lions have dealt with some significant loss this year, the retirement of Ragnow, both of their coordinators have left. Ben Johnson, of course, to Chicago, Aaron Glenn to the Jets. man, I don't know. Carlton Davis III went to the Patriots. Kevin Zeitler went to Tennessee. So the offensive line from this year to last year certainly has been changed. They did draft Tate Ratledge from Georgia in the second round. He was a guard for the Bulldogs, so the transition from guard to center could be somewhat difficult, but there's certainly a lot of talent for the rookie out of Georgia. But yeah, that one, I mean, that's when I saw that come across the timeline, I was, hold on, wait a minute. Of course, the initial reaction is injury related. That's, you know, that's going to be hotly debated and speculated upon. The only other real big news out of the NFL, Ronald Darby retired from the National Football League after 10 years. He retired. He put the Texans put him on the reserve retired list on Monday after signing with them for a 1-year deal back in March. He was expected to be a backup, but now it seems his career might be over with. 913-586-7965. That's our text line number. But coming up, we're going to have Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star joining us live to talk about the Royals. Talk about what's been happening recently, what to expect in St. Louis, and most importantly, what his expectations or what he's hearing the expectations are for one Jack Caglione as he anticipates making his debut in the show tomorrow night. You're listening to After Hours, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, 96.5 The Fan.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
As we all wait around with bated breath for tomorrow night in St. Louis, as Jack Caglione gets set to make his major league debut with the Kansas City Royals, we've got on the line with us right now a guy who is anxiously awaiting traveling to St. Louis to catch the game live. Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star joins us. Jalen, are you more excited now to head to St. Louis to watch this series than you were, say, 24 hours ago?
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see Jack Caglione be in the building, you know. We all expected him to come up sometime this season, but I don't think anyone expected him to be ready to go in the starting lineup tomorrow, Tuesday, at Busch Stadium against the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, if you are a Kansas City Royals fan, this is what you asked for. This is what you dreamed of, and now we're getting it to happen, Logan.
It's obviously a story that is engulfing Kansas City and Royals fans and even some of, you know, people who follow Major League Baseball closely. But I want to talk to you about the expectations surrounding him, right? And firstly, where do you see, because there hasn't been any indication officially where he's even going to hit in the order. What would you anticipate Jack Caglione's spot in this lineup being to start out?
I think you have to look at how the Royals are currently constructed right now, and you can pretty much pinpoint you're going to see a good mixture of Jonathan India at the top, Bobby Witt Jr. batting second, and then you have Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez. Then Michael Garcia has been great in that fifth spot in the lineup. So now you get to where do you want to play Jack? You can play in sixth. He can bat seventh. I think for the way the Royals lineup is constructed now, I might, if I was the Matt Cotrell, the Royals manager, I would put him at six maybe, but he might have to earn that. So maybe it might be seven tomorrow, and then you allow him to work his way up the lineup. But I know he's going to probably be in a run-producing spot because his talent is so immense that the Royals want to use that in the lineup.
No question about it. And regardless of where he is in the lineup, everybody's talking about what kind of numbers Jack Caglione can, will, or should put up in the 102 games that are now remaining in the Royals season. Some of these are, you know, wildly inflated, I think, by fans who are just excited and believe that he can be this superstar, top 10, top 20 caliber player in Major League Baseball, which I believe he can at some point. But what are some realistic expectations that you would put on Jack Caglione in terms of a batting average, homers, RBIs, those sorts of things, those sorts of numbers here with 102 games to go?
It's hard to really put a number on it because when you look at what he did in 50 games now, let's put this in perspective, 50 games in the minor league system, his first full year playing professional baseball, he goes out and he puts up 15 home runs, 56 RBIs, a .322 batting average, a .982 OPS, which it also includes a .593 slugging percentage. Just listen to those numbers and the learning curve that he had to go through, not only in Double A but in Triple A. He's passed both of those tests in supreme order. So to say that he can't come up to the big leagues and be instant production, I mean, who am I to say that he can't do something? Because he's proven that he can. But if we're looking at it from a realistic scope of the what the Royals need out of him and what he can provide, I think it's fair to say, you know, he could approach 10, 15 home runs while he's up with the big league squad. Who knows? He might go on a bender and hit 5 in a week like he did in his first week in AAA. So the sky is the limit, and that's what makes Jack Caglione so intriguing.
So as we talk about Jack Caglione making his debut tomorrow against St. Louis as a part of the I-70 series, I want to take a look at the Royals in the month of May. The pitching was stout. They had great hitting in certain spots, aside from the fact that they could not hit with runners in scoring position. But I think most of what people are talking about in the last month for the Royals is Salvador Perez continues to struggle. He hit just over 200 in the month of May. His power numbers are way down. Have you seen or heard or, you know, been a part of any conversation in which the Royals are even entertaining the idea of possibly adjusting Salvador Perez's position in this lineup or his role with the team?
I don't think so. I don't think that we're at that point yet, because he had 3 singles in Sunday's game last night. So, well, and I think that with Salvi, you know, he's going to be there at the end. Regardless of the ups and the downs, he's going to be there. Yes, we know that age is a factor. We have a 35-year-old catcher. He's going to be having to play at his best ability that he can be at that age. You know, Father Time is undefeated. We say it all the time. But I think that for the Royals and what having Salvi be, he just has to hit. He has to hit more consistently. They need Vinny Pasquantino to hit more consistently. They need even Bobby Wood Jr. to continue to be as great as he has been to continue on that role. Mikel Garcia continue to be at the all-star level that he's at. So it's not just on Salvi. I think that as they go through the remainder of this season, now that you have Jack Caglione up in the lineup, he's going to have his ups and he's going to have his downs. What are the other Royals going to do to help support him as they look to lift this offense up and get back into the playoff mix, get back into wildcard contention, get back into the AL divisional race? Because right now, the Royals need to be productive offensively. They have the pitching and they have the defense, but they need the hitting to come together. And it's not just going to be Jack Caglione. I think they might need even one more option, but they might get that further on near the trade deadline. But they need more production from their offense, but this is a step to go and address that.
You mentioned the pitching, and I think that there's an interesting storyline that's going to be following up here once Cole Reagans finishes up his rehab and makes his way back to the Major League club with Noah Cameron bursting onto the scene, St. Joe kid who was a top prospect in the Royals system and has really confounded expectations. When Reagans comes back, you look at that top four of Reagans, Lugo, Waka, and Bubich, who's been a Cy Young candidate to begin the year, that number five starter position comes into focus pretty quickly. You know, have you heard anything? Have there been any reports that have come across your desk about, you know, Michael Lorenzen or Noah Cameron and who ends up being that fifth starter once Reagans comes back?
Yeah, the Royals have a decision to make. They really do have a decision to make because they have six capable starters when everyone is healthy. You mentioned Noah Cameron. He has done everything you can and then some to prove he deserves to be at the big league level. The issue is they also have guys like you said, Michael Lorenzen. You have Chris Bubich pitching at an all-star Cy Young level. You have Michael Waka, Cole Reagans, and Seth Lugo. Those are your horses in that starting rotation. So for what the Royals have to consider, do they possibly go six-man rotation? If you look at where they are right now, they have off days every Monday this month. So that might not be a solution that they want to go towards because they have time to rest guys. But rest is going to be important because you don't want Chris Bubich to pitch 190, 200 innings. He's just coming back from Tommy John surgery, not even almost a year ago. So you have to really weigh the options. But I think Noah Cameron has proven that he deserves to be up here. And whether it might be a decision to move Lorenzen to the bullpen or make a move from their pitching depth to get another bat, all those decisions are going to be having to be made by the front office. But I think for right now, you roll with what you have and you figure it out. It's a good problem to have.
Certainly is. And you mentioned, you know, potentially moving one of those guys into more of a bullpen role. Lorenzen does have experience in that arena, but is there any conversation to be had about maybe too many mouths to feed when you talk about moving a guy like Lorenzen potentially to the bullpen because of how good the relief pitching has been? Estevez and Ursig and Schreiber and Taylor Clark since he's been called up, and the list goes on and on with Daniel Lynch and some of these other guys that, you know, there might not be a spot in the bullpen for one of these guys inevitably when that decision comes down.
There's always going to be a spot for a veteran like Michael Lorenzen on anyone's roster because of his versatility. People forget that last year he actually pitched out of the bullpen. This is a guy that can be a starter. He can be a reliever. And you need as many pitchers as you can to get through a grueling 162-game slate. And that's any team, any organization. I think that what the Royals, they're going to evaluate everything, and I believe that they're going to make the best decision for what fits them right now. And like you said, Logan, they have so many different guys that are pitching well out of that bullpen, but they also have a couple of guys that are still hurt, and Sam Long, Connor Harvey, we haven't seen Kyle Wright yet. He's still working his way back. Alex Marsh, James MacArthur. So they're going to need different guys in different roles to fill in different spots. So I wouldn't be shocked with whatever decision the Royals make either way. But they do have versatility. They do have a lot of good arms, and that's what you need to make a run deep in the postseason.
I want to go back. You were mentioning a little bit ago that, you know, the Royals may not be done adding bats. You know, the call up for Caglione, they've called up John Rave and Nick Lofton in the past couple of weeks as well. And you mentioned the trade deadline. And I'm curious because now that you've made some of these moves, you called up Rave and you called up Caglione to kind of solve or try to solve those outfield problems that the Royals have had. Drew Waters has become an everyday guy in this lineup with his batting average. If the Royals were to try to trade for a bat here at the deadline, where do you see the position being for that guy? You know, is it another outfield bat, or is it somebody that you look at as more of an infielder? I know second base has been problematic from a fielding standpoint. Or are you looking at a guy that can just primarily DH, you know, sort of a Kendrys Morales type for this Kansas City Royals team?
I think the Royals are more than likely going to look to get someone that can impact the roster from an outfield perspective. They have Jonathan India, and he's going to be here to lead off, and they have settled him in at second base, his more natural position. And that's where he's pretty much going to be looking like moving forward. So from there, you have Michael Garcia that plays an excellent third base. That is probably where he's going to be at. Now, you with the infield pretty much set, and the Royals don't want a full-time DH because they like to mix and match their lineup based on the matchups. It's really looking like if they're going to make another outfield addition, it's probably going to be someone that can play a corner outfield spot. So when you look at whoever may be available, they need someone that continues to provide thump in the lineup. That's really the difference between the 2024 team and the 2025 team. The Royals are not driving in runs when they have runners in scoring position. They have to address that. Jack Caglione will help, but you like we've said before, and we said many, many times, he cannot be the savior for the Kansas City Royals. He can be a part of fixing what needs to be addressed, but he can't be the full answer. And that's unfair to put on a 22-year-old rookie sensation that he's going to be. So you have to figure out a way to support him, support Bobby Witt Jr., and get Vinny and Salvador Perez to come back and hit like they were last year. That is going to be really the only way this Royals team gets the offense going.
I think that's incredibly well said. And, you know, go out, enjoy your time in St. Louis. Jalen, I'm sure we'll enjoy it on television, getting to watch Jack Caglione make his debut with the Kansas City Royals. And you'll be able to say from here on forever that you were there the night that Jack Caglione made his debut in Major League Baseball. And hopefully that story carries a lot of weight for the Kansas City Royals in future years. I appreciate you taking the time tonight, my man.
Thank you so much, Logan. I appreciate it as well. Thanks for having me on, and I hope to talk to you soon.
All righty, that sounds great. That is Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star joining us, talking about Jack Caglione and what the expectations for him are. I think he and I are sort of in the same vein. His might be a little bit lower than even mine were. I said somewhere between 20 and 25 home runs. I think he said somewhere around 15 for this Royals team this year. It's going to be very, very intriguing to see. 913-586-7965 is our number. We're going to take our final break of the program, come back and wrap things up here on this Thursday night edition of After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, your home for Kansas City sports. The Kansas City Chiefs have a happy quarterback this evening. The Texas Tech Red Raiders softball team with a monumental upset of the Oklahoma Sooners. 3-2, a walk-off winner for Texas Tech as they advance to the Women's College World Series championship. Wow. Oklahoma, who finishes the year 52-9, but loses today to Texas Tech. So it's going to be Texas. It's an all-Texas final. Texas against Texas Tech for the national championship. Game one of that series will start on June 4th. Wow. I know you were kind of watching the game periodically there in the production booth, and it looked like Oklahoma was going to lose, and then they kind of made a late comeback, and they tied it up late. And Texas Tech walking it off. Their first Women's College World Series final berth in school history. Wow. That's an incredible story. This Oklahoma team was in the midst of one of the most remarkable runs in the history of college athletics. To have that kind of it end in that fashion is got to be a little bit heartbreaking. What's not heartbreaking is Mike Trout is teeing off today. Coming back off the injury, he's back this week after missing a ton of time over the last, God, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. Hopefully this is the one that sticks and he stays healthy for another extended period of time. He's 3-for-4 today. He's got a home run. He's got 3 RBIs. His batting average has leapfrogged from a 208 up to a 225. He's now got an on-base percentage of 296. So best game of the year thus far for Mike Trout, no question, as he's now got 10 home runs, 23 ribbies on the year. Love seeing Mike Trout finally, you know, get himself back under wraps here, man. Get his career back going again. Talked about him earlier. Just one of the most phenomenal players I've ever had an opportunity to watch with my own two eyes in my lifetime anyway. Let's close things out. We'll talk a little NBA Finals because, of course, on Saturday, Game 6, Eastern Conference Finals, Pacers walk away with a home victory over the New York Knicks. They beat them 125-108. Pascal Siakam with 31 points. He was the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. Tyrese Halliburton finished with 21-13-6. He also had three steals in the game. So it's going to be Pacers Thunder for the NBA Finals. Two smaller market teams in the NBA, which I know is going to be much to the chagrin of folks in the East and West Coast. Two teams from, as they like to call it, flyover country here in the Midwest. Well, man, up yours. These are two phenomenal basketball teams. The Pacers, an incredible story with Tyrese Halliburton leading the way. You know, a team that nobody really saw coming out of the Eastern Conference when these playoffs began. They opened up with a series against the Bucks, dominated it, won it in five, which I don't think anybody saw that being a five-game series once you had Dame back and Giannis is playing, a team that's won an NBA Finals, and they got through them no problem. And then you go take on the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were the best team in the Eastern Conference. And what do? You beat them in five games. And it's like, okay, you beat the Cavs, but the Celtics are still going to be there, right? Well, the Celtics struggle to shoot the ball. Jason Tatum tears his Achilles. All of a sudden, their season's done. So in comes the New York Knicks, a team that you looked at the Knicks on paper and you're like, they're more talented than the Cleveland Cavaliers. But they couldn't put it together. They continue to struggle. And now you've got the Pacers taking on the Thunder in the NBA Finals. A tremendous story. Thunder were the best team in basketball all year, and I think that's where they will stay. I still think the Thunder win this game in six. Oklahoma City gets their first NBA Finals trophy. First time back there since that big three of KD and Harden and Westbrook. They're the best team in basketball. The Pacers have a great club, but it's just not going to be enough. I just don't see it, man. Between Shea and Chet and Hartenstein and Lou Dort and Jalen Willie, this team is loaded for bear. They got guys off the bench that could give you 10 or 15. This Thunder team is great, and they will be for probably a pretty long time. That'll do it for tonight's program. For my producer, Jacob Mustard, I'm Logan Weber. Thank you guys for joining us. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for getting involved in the text line. We'll be back with you guys again next Monday. We got Royals baseball coming up all week this week. Stay tuned in to 96.5. The Fan, Jack Caglione, makes his debut live on this station tomorrow night. It's After Hours on 96.5. The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.